You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France in association with Rafa. From grand tours to group rides, the Champs-Élysées to coffee shops, Rafa exists to celebrate the world's most beautiful sport. Today we are in Paris.
Welcome to our final Tour de France podcast.
Oh, well, yeah.
And I still don't believe that Geraint Thomas can win the Tour de France, or will win the Tour de France, but he has. He's won the Tour de France. Remarkable, really.
Well, we'll check it out on Monday.
Check it on Monday. But he described, Geraint Thomas himself said in his press conference that it felt surreal. And let me make one thing clear. Geraint Thomas has always been capable of a big win. We've felt that for years and years. He's had a lot of bad luck. He's been in a lot of situations where if things had gone differently, if he hadn't crashed, then you wonder how he would have got on. I'm thinking of the Giro last year in particular, actually. But here we are, and everything, it's almost like, as I said in the podcast a couple of days ago, all that bad luck, all that misfortune, all those crashes have been compensated for in one gift to Geraint Thomas. And he's had 3 weeks where not a single thing has gone wrong for him, which is in itself quite remarkable.
Even on the day of the time trial, it threatened to rain and really didn't. I mean, that could have made it very awkward, but the sun came out and shone. It was as if it was meant to be.
And should have won it.
No, we're not.
Not this old chestnut from FT.
But he's a deserving winner.
Where are we, Richard?
Hang on, that's my question. Well, where are we, Lionel?
We're in Biarritz. We're recording this podcast on the Saturday night after the time trial before Paris.
You're being too honest there.
We could have said we're in Paris.
No, honesty is the best policy.
No, we're transparent. We're absolutely transparent. If anyone wants to apply for an interview with the Cycling Podcast, we will consider that request and then deny it. No, we're totally transparent about this. The logistics tomorrow are absolutely crackers. We've been very kindly provided with a car by Skoda, and that car has to be back in the UK. And Francois lives in Marseille. Richard's decided off his own back to go on a family holiday to San Sebastian, which has very much left me with the job of driving home to the UK. I'm not going to take risks with my own safety.
Life.
With my own life. I don't think it's feasible to get a car from Biarritz to Paris on Sunday in time for the stage. Possibly it is, but I think... I don't want to do that.
Well, we don't like it. And also, there is a stage in Paris, and we are going to have a tail via tap. And let's hear it now.
It's now Sunday evening, Richard, and I am in a pretty budget hotel on the outskirts of Rouen. It's a real come down after a couple of days at Francois' favourite Pyrenean hideaway, Le Viscos. But that's the way it goes. You have good days and not so good days. I've been driving for much of today because we need to get our Skoda car back to Skoda and say thank you to them for helping us get round France. By the time I get home tomorrow, we'll have covered nearly 4,000 miles by the looks of it. And all day I've been on the road to Rouen, and my tour has finished very much the way it started, because I spent about 30 minutes on the ring road through and round Rouen, stuck in traffic, just as we did on our way to the Vendée over 3 weeks ago. But I did stop off to watch the important bit of the final stage, the 21st stage of the Tour de France, the traditional finish on the Champs-Élysées in Paris, 116 kilometres of racing, the usual celebrations in the early part of the stage, and the predictable sprint on the famous boulevard. There was quite a bit of action, though. As the race entered Paris, Sylvain Chavanel of Direct Energy got away to mark his 18th and final Tour de France. After that, with around 52 kilometres to go, there was a breakaway. It included Sylvain Dillier of AG2R, Michael Schaar of BMC Racing, Damien Gaudin of Direct Energy, Niels Pollitt of Katusha, Guillaume van Kiersbroek of Wanty Group Gobert, and Taylor Finney of EF Education First. Finney riding with a fractured nose after a pretty heavy fall a couple of days ago. They were kept under control, but they carried on riding until the last 10 kilometres, and the final rider, Pollitt, was caught with around 6 kilometres to go. That was more or less the last lap of the Champs-Élysées circuit. On that last lap, Marco Mercato of UAE Team Emirates tried to get away, but the sprinters' teams, what's left of them, were always attentive. Daniel Oss of Boro Hansgrohe also tried to go, and Yves Lampaert, the Belgian champion for Quickstep, was the last man to try and beat the bunch sprint, but he was caught with around 250 metres to go. And then it was a sprint and a victory for Alexander Kristoff, the Norwegian, riding for Team UAE Emirates. He edged out John Degenkolb and Arnaud Démare, and it was Christophe's third Tour de France stage win of his career after a couple in 2014. He's had a difficult tour, but he's rounded it off in fine style with a victory in the European Champions jersey. As expected, no changes overall. Geraint Thomas is the winner of the Tour de France ahead of Tom Dumoulin and Chris Froome. Peter Sagan equaled Eric Zabel's record of 6 green jerseys. Julian Alaphilippe is the king of the mountains. Pierre Latour won the white jersey as the best young rider. Movistar won the team classification. And Dan Martin, as we discovered yesterday, was named the super combative rider of the tour for his attacking through, pretty much all of the mountain stages. A little word for Lawson Craddock of Team EF Education First. He finished the tour, which looked very unlikely in the early days after that heavy fall on the opening stage. A little footnote is that he has been last man overall every day in the Tour de France, and so he wins the notional and honorary Red Lantern. So that's it. The 2018 Tour de France has reached its conclusion, and Geraint Thomas is the champion.
Yes, as you say, Lionel, Geraint Thomas is the Tour de France winner. And as everybody knows, those are words that I didn't imagine myself saying when he took the yellow jersey in the Alps, or even when he won the second stage at Alpe d'Huez. Not to backtrack at all, but I was just not convinced that he would go the full 3 weeks without suffering some bad luck or having a bad day or falling ill or falling off. And I really thought the kind of proven strength over 3 weeks of Chris Froome, the Movistar trident, Tom Dumoulin, I thought one of those riders would prevail in the end. But it's been really interesting today. I'm talking now on Sunday. I'm in Biarritz. I've been tuning into some of the coverage back home in Britain of Thomas's win in the papers and on the radio, and the tone is very different, it seems to me, to the reaction to Froome's victories, which I think owes something to Thomas's Welshness. You know, he has a whole country who can claim him as their own, whereas Froome's national identity has always been more complicated. But the other factor is Thomas himself and his personality. You know, he is very down to earth. He's very straightforward. He's got this dry sense of humour, and he is very ordinary and very easy for people to relate to. There are no airs and graces with him at all. But thinking about him and his very gradual rise to this position, that has perhaps made it more difficult to recognise and appreciate his talent. I was thinking back to his first tour in 2007 when he was 21, the Benjamin of the race, the youngest rider in the race, and there was no fuss around him at all because he just got on with it. And because he seemed to take it in his stride, people sort of assumed that it was easy for him. And even, you know, I remember one stage in week two into Montpellier, the bunch came streaming in, and the guy at the front was 21-year-old Geraint Thomas setting up Robbie Hunter, who won the stage. But even then, even with that type of performance, there was a sort of lack of fuss. And it's been like that ever since with Geraint Thomas. The team pursuit was the ideal event for him in so many ways because he thrives on being part of a team, and he isn't somebody who seems to feel the need to stand out himself. He's also always been incredibly easy for us as journalists to deal with. I remember the 2015 tour when he was sitting fourth with just a few days to go in the Alps, and he had that one bad day 2 days from the end, and he fell out of the top 10 overall. And, you know, that had been an achievable dream, it seemed, to even aim for the podium in that tour. A few of us at the end of that stage were waiting beyond the line. I think it was in Gap, if I remember correctly. And most riders in those circumstances, you know, he wasn't well, he had lost a big chance. I think most riders would have just carried on. But Thomas stopped and spoke, and he was funny and self-deprecating, as he always is. He's one of these people that were sometimes, as I say, guilty of overlooking perhaps because of their personality, because he gets on with everyone, and there's been so little fuss around him. You know, as Nigel Mitchell told us the other day, it perhaps isn't the case that you have to be a bad guy, as Francois maintains, to win the Tour de France. And it has been striking to see and hear in the reaction from other riders and people in the sport how popular a winner Geraint Thomas is, and how so many of his peers and even people on other teams believe that he is a you know, very deserving winner.
The thing about Geraint Thomas, Rich, is that we have spent a lot of the tour talking about whether or not he'd have a bad day or whether he would, you know, have some kind of mishap, because, like it or not, you know, his career, he has had a lot of high profile incidents of misfortune. I mean, go back to when he was a teenager and the incident when he was preparing for the track season down in Australia, and a freak accident, really, when there was a crash and a bit of metal hit him. And he had to have an operation to have his spleen removed. I mean, how unlucky can you get? And just off the top of my head, a few incidents from his career. He got blown off the road at Gent Wevelgem once. The one that really sort of sticks in my mind as a sort of typical bit of Geraint Thomas luck, if you like, was the Commonwealth Games road race in Glasgow in 2014, when, you know, he was on his way to victory. He got a puncture around about 5 or 6 kilometres from the finish, and the neutral service were, well, the wheel change was agonisingly slow. And yet, I think this really sums up Geraint Thomas's temperament and his calmness and his whatever will be kind of demeanour, because there were no histrionics. He didn't try and get involved and take over. He let the guy, who was all fingers and thumbs by this stage, complete that wheel change, slow as it was, got on his bike, and you know, managed to win the race. And I think that sort of says a lot about Geraint's character, as much as the 2013 Tour de France, where he crashed on the opening day and rode the whole race with a fractured pelvis. I mean, you know, that gives you an indication of how tough and how determined he was, because, of course, in 2012 he'd not ridden the Tour de France for Team Sky because he was focusing on the team pursuit at the London Olympics, which of course he won. And so there's really a kind of theme to Geraint Thomas's career, and when we sort of assess how he's come to win the Tour de France at the age of 32, well, the simple answer for that is that 2008, 2012 were years that were totally dedicated to the track. He had a period of time where he was focusing on the classics as well. Last year, remember, he was the joint leader with Mikel Landa at the Giro d'Italia, and the pair of them crashed on really the first big mountain stage. And although, you know, he bounced back and finished very close to Tom Dumoulin in the time trial, you know, he had to pull out of the race. Again, it gives it absolutely everything. And I think we saw that in the opening week of the Tour de France. He had that bit of fortune, good fortune for once on the opening day, in that he wasn't caught out by the crash or by any of the crashes or splits, and he got his nose in front of all the people who mattered. And we saw him going for those time bonuses. You know, it may only have been 1, 2, or 3 seconds at a time, but he was just nudging ahead of everyone else who mattered, so that he would be in a position to inherit the yellow jersey when the race reached the Alps. But he didn't just inherit the yellow jersey, did he? He went out and seized it. He won the stage at La Rossière, and then, you know, astonishingly, really, won on Alpe d'Huez. And I think even he couldn't quite believe that. And it will all be sinking in now that his name will go up on one of the roadsides on, I think, bend number 14. Probably need to check that. But certainly Geraint Thomas's name will go onto one of those road signs. And I think we saw Geraint Thomas presented with an opportunity in this Tour de France. And he had the willingness and the wherewithal to really seize it with both hands. It was interesting listening to Jonathan Vaughters at our event in Annecy midway through the tour, and when we were anticipating that Thomas would take the yellow jersey. Jonathan basically revealed that he had been very interested in signing Geraint Thomas a number of years ago when you know, his contract at Team Sky was expiring or about to expire, but he picked up a sense from their conversations that Thomas was happier as a, you know, working in service of other people, particularly in the Grand Tours. Perhaps didn't want the pressure and the spotlight of being the leader and having all of that expectation on his shoulders. Well, I mean, he's pretty much proved that point wrong, and everything has come together for him at you know, for a pretty much perfect Tour de France. You know, Francois talks a lot about the luck that the Tour champions need, or rather they need to avoid the bad luck. And for once, Geraint Thomas was, I won't say lucky, because I think you make your own luck. He rode with a confidence and a self-assuredness that maybe comes from knowing that he was in extremely good shape and knowing that this opportunity might never have come round for him again.
Land of my fathers, Arhidados. Now she is very happy now, and worries have all gone.
Well, one member of the cycling podcast team did make it to Paris and the Champs-Élysées, and that was Orla Chenoui, largely because she was on a flight this morning from down in the southwest of France up to the capital. A little bit easier, quicker to get to Paris if you don't have to cover 800 kilometres on the road. Anyway, this is Orla Chenoui's postcard from Paris.
While Richard, Lionel and Francois may not have been bothered with a trip to Paris, but I love a Welsh choir, so there was no way I was going to miss this party. The singing you just heard was from outside the Team Sky bus, where hundreds of fans gathered as soon as the race was over, flying huge Welsh flags in the evening breeze and singing a never-ending cacophony of every Welsh song you could think of, from Land of My Fathers to Tom Jones's Delilah. It was like a mini national holiday, and I'm told by those who made the journey from Wales that it's just a fraction of what Geraint Thomas can expect when he goes home. One Welsh TV presenter told me he was like a king already back there, and you could see the genuine pride on all of those people who were taking in their new national hero. The high regard in which he's held as a bike rider and as a person has been talked about a lot over the last few days, but I would say it's nonetheless true because of that. His mum, dad and brother, Hilary, Howell and Alan, were all soaking up that atmosphere outside the team bus. His mum reduced to tears when I chatted to her. I'm pretty sure that's because of Geraint and not because of me. And his dad saying how horrible it was to watch his son over the past 3 weeks. Such was his fear of the kind of crash he's so used to seeing. It was interesting chatting to Rod Ellingworth as well, the Team Sky and former British under 23 cycling academy coach, who told me that after seeing Geraint return to the bus after the podium, that he finally lost it. He blubbed, he said, when he saw his former protege. And he's not known for his emotion, is Rod. He says that's something he's never done before in all of the Team Sky wins, or indeed when he coached Mark Cavendish to World Championship glory. I also had a word with Geraint's teammate, fellow Welshman and childhood friend, Luke Rowe.
Luke, congratulations. Yes, another victory. How special is this one?
Yeah, I'm lucky enough to be part of the Tour de France winning team in 15, 16, 17 with Froome and now 18 with G. And luckily enough, they've had the opportunities to ride for great champions, but more importantly, great people. So it's just a huge honour to be part of the winning team again. And with G, you know, we started cycling as little kids, bobbing around the streets on BMXs when we were 8, 10, 12, you know. And now when I look at the Arc de Triomphe and I see Champs-Élysées and I see that yellow podium, I think he's going to be still on top of it. It's quite special, actually, and it's just one of them goosebump moments, you know, so good on him.
Have you spent the last few days or the last 24 hours reminiscing in any way about when you were with kids and how far you've both come since then?
Yeah, we've got a few stories, actually, just a few funny bits and bobs from back in the day, and you know, and just proud of the guy. I think it's a phrase that's like overused in sport. Yeah, he deserves it, but with G, you've seen him put himself, selfish rider year after year, put it on the line for other people. And I've seen how much he puts into it, and he really does deserve it, so chapeau to him, really.
Can you share any of the stories? Any of them repeatable?
From my next door neighbour. Probably still doesn't know to this day, and they went away on holiday and they had rabbits, so we had to go and feed their rabbits when they went away, and G was staying over my house. It must have been, I was 8, he was 12 maybe, and we went over to feed the rabbits and went into their garage, and there was this amazing BMX, and it was one of the sons from next door, and G was like, oh, let's have a go on this BMX. So, all right, they're away on holiday, let's have a go on his BMX. So typical G, he went down this really steep banking and he crashed the BMX, went over his handlebars, crashed the BMX, and he broke this BMX. And we were like, well, what are they going to do? They're going to come back from holiday and there's this battered BMX. So we told my dad, took it to the bike shop, cleaned it up, and they still don't know to this day. So Nick Jenkins, if you're watching, sorry about that, mate.
I think that bike might go for a pretty penny on eBay now.
Yeah, I mean, he's gone from his hero now, isn't he? Again, entering that legendary status and just getting what he deserves.
And you have been such a key part of all these successes over the years, and you've been such a key workhorse for everybody. Did it mean anything different to be riding for him?
Yeah, I just got a kiss off the boss. So I think
that doesn't happen often.
I think that happens when you've done it right over the past few weeks. But no, I think I'm sat on the beer box and the boys want beers. So. No, I think I've had my best Tour de France to date, which is always nice just to keep on improving. Just being consistent day in, day out, but essentially just a small piece of a very big puzzle. There's a lot of people who put a heart and soul and months and months into this, and I'm just a part of that. And I think it's one of them teams that eight guys come together, finished with seven, but everyone kind of turned up with their A game and everyone gave a 10 out of 10 performance over the 3 weeks, and I think that's a big part of the success we've had.
We saw you and Geraint holding a Welsh flag between the two of you and on the ride into Paris today. That must have been pretty special as well.
Typical G, classy bloke. Like, he's in the limelight, he's the king. He's the star of the show. And I was in the middle of the peloton and he said, Luke, come back and have a photo with me and with a Welsh flag. And that's classy and nice from G, you know. He could have been there with a flag on his own, but he called me back and said, come with a photo. And just little things like that, quite nice. So just shows the class of the guy, doesn't it?
Congratulations, Luke. Well done. Enjoy this moment.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
What was really striking as the sun set on the streets of Paris and the fans showed no sign of folding up their flags and going home, while the riders popped onto the bus for beers and a dance and then back off again to sign autographs and mingle, was the contrast between this atmosphere and a lot of what the team have faced over the past 3 weeks. This crowd was, of course, self-selecting. Only those who wanted to celebrate this win would really bother hanging around. But there was a sense of relief, I think, amongst the team that they got through this, that they got this far and could finally enjoy themselves. Even Chris Froome seemed genuinely happy for his teammates, and dare I say it, maybe even a little bit relieved to be out of the limelight for a bit. Well, they've all headed off now to the team hotel for a quick turnaround before the team party tonight, as Geraint Thomas's win is dissected and analysed and the team itself scrutinised and maligned by some for its sixth win in 7 years. They don't really care. They're off to have the mother of all parties, as is indeed the rest of the Tour de France troop, who finally made it to their finish line in Paris. Boys, you don't know what you're missing.
A community around the world, stories and films with the most compelling characters, the world's finest apparel, explore the world of cycling with Rafa.
I'm Simon from Rafa. At Rafa, we believe that cycling transforms lives and that riding's the answer to many of our daily problems and challenges. We have 23 Rafa clubhouses around the world and we host 300 rides a week with thousands of people. So wherever you are, we invite you to ride with us. See rafa.cc to find a ride near you.
Thank you very much indeed to Rafa, our wonderful sponsor, and they really are a wonderful sponsor. We've been sponsored by Rafa now for, well, this is our third Tour de France sponsored by Rafa, and we're extremely grateful to them for the support they give us, and long may it continue. It's fantastic. here we are then in Biarritz reflecting on the Tour de France. And Lionel, you are actually going to give your tale of the tour.
Pressure's on here because I'm a couple of beers in and there's glass of wine.
Let's start in the Vendée.
What's the wine, François? The wine is
a Morgon Beaujolais wine.
Week one of the tour started in the Vendée and it finished in Roubaix on the cobbles. And it was the week of Fernando Gaviria. It was the week of Peter Sagan and of BMC Racing, Greg Van Avermaet, Dan Martin on the Mur de Bretagne, Dylan Groenewegen on two of the dullest stages I've ever witnessed in the Tour de France. But he won them. He won't care that they were terribly tedious and that we nearly fell asleep watching them.
He definitely won't care about that.
Yeah, well, you weren't there when Jean-Paul Van Poppel won, four stages every year, and he was pretty boring as well. But it gave us lots of time to discover the beauties and the delicacies of wine in the regions.
And then there was John Degenkolb on the cobbles. François said, really, if you were predicting the tour in advance, you would say Greg Van Avermaet would win that stage on the cobbles in Roubaix. But John Degenkolb, it was the big kind of good human interest story of the tour, wasn't it? Because it's been such a long road back for Degenkolb from the incident in Spain where Sunweb were basically wiped out on their training ride by a driver on the wrong side of the road, and Degenkolb almost lost a finger, and the psychological impact of that crash or that incident and the long journey back, it meant that it was a really emotional victory for him.
Yeah, it was interesting to see the reaction from some of the other riders in the peloton, including Warren Barguil, who was involved in the crash as well. Chad Haga, riding here, was also involved in that crash. And you can still see the scar on Chad Haga from that crash. I was in Calpe to interview John Degenkolb and Tom Dumoulin on the day that happened. And, to be in the hotel as news filtered back of what had happened was really shocking. And all my interviews were understandably cancelled. And there was a real air of sadness and trauma around the team. And, they had the first half of that season was dreadful for them. And it's interesting just to look at where they are now, Sunweb, one of the most admired teams in the peloton, really, and have put Tom Dumoulin here in second on the podium in Paris.
Week two, we had that long transfer down from Roubaix to Annecy. We did a couple of events in the Alps, didn't we? Annecy and at La Giétaz. The one thing that's not up for debate is that Julian Alaphilippe won the polka dot jersey, and he laid the foundations for that at Le Grand Bornand by winning the stage. Week two was all about Alaphilippe, about Geraint Thomas winning back-to-back mountain stages, about Peter Sagan winning the sprint in Valence, and then about Astana winning two stages in a row with Omar Fraile and Magnus Cort. And then we came to the Pyrenees, really, and Alaphilippe once again won the stage after the rest day. A bit of a trend there. Nairo Quintana managed to win the very short, punchy stage in the Pyrenees. Arnaud Démare, what can we say about Arnaud Démare? I mean, he's a maligned figure, really, and he proved all his doubters wrong by winning the stage in Po.
Well, you have to admire him in the end. There are lots of doubters and haters of many teams, including Team Sky. Démare has his haters as well. How does he respond? Well, like most of these guys do, and that's actually what they should do. They win races.
And then the Pyrenees has finished with Primoz Roglic winning the descending competition, quite apt for a former ski jumper. And then Tom Dumoulin, world time trial champion.
Just a shame there wasn't a ramp at the end of that descent, wasn't there? And you could you imagine? Soared.
He comes down into La Rune, and then there's a little 1K ramp, and then he takes off and gains 5 minutes and wins the tour.
Maybe an innovation there for Christian Prudhomme. Don't tell Graham Bartlett and Velon about that idea, please, Lionel.
Oh, dear. Bit of an end-of-term feel to this podcast, isn't there?
Well, it is the end of
the tour. It's been a long journey, a long adventure.
Unsung heroes. I mean, Geraint Thomas, we'll talk about him a little bit later on, but unsung heroes in this Tour de France, there have been a few. Well, I spoke to one of them at the time trial on Saturday, Søren Kragh Andersen, who I was first really aware of at the Vuelta last year. He went very close to winning a stage there. He is a good finisher and good on little punchy climbs. But I think he's ridden exceptionally well in this Tour de France. He's quite modest. He's not one to be too expansive in interviews and so on. But I think he's done a really good job here for Tom Dumoulin and Team Sunweb. So I spoke to him at the finish of the time trial, and here's what he had to say.
this seems to have been a good tour for you personally, obviously for Tom as well, but you've had an important role to play here and you've ridden really well.
I don't know. I did my best, and I'm not the best climber for Tom in the mountains, but I did my best, and I'm happy about that. So, yeah.
Often able to get yourself into positions though, where you were able to help him.
Yeah, that's true, but that's also because we have good sports directors who made a good tactic to get the best out of our team. So in the end, they also made a tactic, and I could of course finish it. But I'm happy, like I said, with my performance. I did my best.
You know, is there anything Tom could have done differently over the 3 weeks, you think?
I don't think so. I think he raced a perfect race for him, and with a GU in his legs, he did a really amazing race. Yeah.
Do you enjoy being part of a team that he's the leader of?
Yeah, really, really a lot. He's a great leader and a great person, and yeah, he's learning me a lot, and I like him a lot, so I'm really happy to be in the team where he is.
Francois, what's been your best memory of the tour?
In terms of the cycling, you know, it's a little bit strange because once again, there's been mountain stages, there's been time trials, there's been all these classic stages, you know, where you tend to remember. But for me, cycling wise, the highlight of the race was probably Chondegon Corb win in Roubaix, because for all the other, and I said that before, but I'm going to say that again, It was an interesting tour. They always are, but it was a kind of a predictable tour. Sprinters won the sprints. Tom Dumoulin won the time trial. The guy who won the first mountain top finish won the tour. Nairo Quintana won a mountain stage, the short one. BMC won the team time trial. Actually, we could have all ridden, you know, down those results before the tour started. So there were Peter Sagan won the green jersey. I mean, there was not really a surprise. Maybe the little bit of the only real surprise, or it wasn't, because we know John Degenkolb, he won Paris-Roubaix, but the fact that he came back from almost nowhere, and everybody was looking down on him as, you know, a kind of a has-been, you know, his career was behind him. The fact that he came back to life to win on the cobbles, a very dreaded stage for lots of people, the stage in which Richie Porte again lost his hopes of winning the tour. For me, remains in terms of what has been a predictable tour, not in a way because it was predictable, not a very exciting tour. In terms of pure cycling beauty, I think that was my highlight.
And we heard from Søren Kragh-Hansen, who I said was my unsung hero. Jonathan Castroviejo, I think, as well, is a bit of an unsung hero, did a great job for Team Sky, Egan Bernal as well. But do you have any unsung heroes, Francois?
I'm not a great fan of Astana in general, but Kangert, I mean, was absolutely amazing. He was up there many times on his own, going for the breakaways, came close to winning the stage, led the way for two stage wins by Astana, by Freile and Kort Nielsen, as you said. Well, Kort, that guy is very strong, very, nobody talks about him at all. But, he really impressed me. He's the first one that comes to mind, oddly enough.
Lionel?
Don't know about unsung heroes at the moment, but I would say that none of the jerseys were terribly keenly contested. I mean, Geraint Thomas has had the yellow jersey since the Alps. Peter Sagan, we know, was going to win the green jersey right from the very, very start. Julian Alaphilippe, really, once he'd won the stage and then went on the attack the next day, it was obvious he was targeting that, and there was no real competition. And the white jersey competition has never really caught fire, because Pierre Latour was well ahead, and Egan Bernal, who probably was the best young rider, without a doubt, Egan Bernal, but he was sacrificed to work for Team Sky. So there's not been an awful lot of intrigue in terms of the destination of the jerseys. There are a heck of a lot of teams that are going home with absolutely nothing. No stage win, no days in a jersey, nothing. I mean, only half the teams have won a stage, and You know, they're. I think
it's interesting though. I hark back to the Friday's podcast and when we were talking about Katusha, and it's been fascinating following Ian Boswell in his first Tour de France for Katusha, a team, you know, that lost half their riders, finished with four, and to just get a sense of a team like that still having ambition, albeit modest ambitions, you know. I say top 10 of the tour isn't that modest an ambition. They reflect on a successful tour on the basis of that. I mean, okay, Marcel Kittel could have won stages, but given that he was out of the race, given they were down to four in the end, they had a pretty successful tour. And I suppose there are lots of teams that will maybe regard the tour as a success. Cofidis, for example, we heard about them in a kilometre zero, and they didn't win a stage again, but they were pretty prominent. They were pretty present. They were second on a stage.
Yeah, Christophe Laporte, yeah.
They had guys in breaks, and you know, they were more visible perhaps than they'd been in previous years. So we're guilty sometimes maybe of not acknowledging the goals that some teams might have. I mean, not every team is here to win the Tour de France.
Unsung hero number one for me. I mean, but it's always the case, unfortunately for him, or fortunately. And we rewarded him with a... you know, by jury's decision with a Pedalard de Charme jersey. Greg Van Avermaet didn't win a stage. Well, he won a stage with BMC, in the team time trial, held the yellow jersey for quite a while. But once again, what an amazing, you know, in these days when we were discussing, you know, specializing, you know, climbers becoming more specialized, sprinters becoming more specialized, Grand Tour riders becoming more specialized. And here's a guy who's an all-rounder, who's versatile, who, you know, when Richie Porte disappeared from, you know, the GC contention, what did he do? Well, he was... You know, it was in the yellow jersey couple of, you know, three or four days, maybe five, can't remember exactly just now. But held his ground in the mountains, finishes in the top 30. What a hell of a rider he is. And he never, I find, despite being, you know, former Paris-Roubaix winner, Olympic champion, he never gets the credit he deserves because the main guy, you know, who's he has been fighting with for all these years has been Peter Sagan, who's kind of exuberant and is not. And once again, what a great rider Greg Van Avermaet is, even in Grand Tours.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport.
Whether you're grinding up the French Alps or just taking your mates on a local loop, Science in Sport Rego Rapid Recovery Plus will help you recover faster after your ride, so you're ready to go again the next day.
Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. Very grateful to them for their support. And you can get 25% off at scienceinsport.com with the code SISCP25. Now, continuing our discussion of the tour, looking back at the tour, team of the tour, Lotto NL Jumbo. I mean, Team Sky won the race, and they did so in a clinical fashion. As they,
you mean, it's not Movistar? They won the team classification.
Oh, what a lot! No.
I mean, I think Lotto NL Jumbo, we forget that they were fighting on two fronts. They had GC ambitions and they had a sprinter. And in these days of eight-man teams, a lot of teams like Mitchelton Scott, who had a disappointing tour, sacrificed their sprinter in order to focus on GC. It didn't work out. Lotto NL Jumbo came here with two GC riders and a sprinter, which is quite an ambitious undertaking, but it worked. They won two stages with Dylan Groenewegen before he was... he packed the stage on the Date Alpe d'Huez, so he didn't finish, but they finished with two guys in the top five overall, which is remarkable, really, for a team that doesn't have one of the biggest budgets in the sport. At the finish of the time trial, I spoke to their general manager, the main man, Richard Pluga, about their tour and about their plans for the future.
How do you reflect on the race from your point of view?
We did a really good job. We tried every day, we had a chance every day. That was the focus we got into this race with Dylan Groenewegen in the first week. So we had a job every day to do, and we could win the stage, and we did it twice. And then we got a kind of in the flow for the classification guys. And, you know, they do until now terrific. So it's incredible.
There was a moment in the stage yesterday when, you know, Robert Hessing went to the front and really brought the the gap down to the leading group, which had obviously Landa and Bardi in it. That seemed to be quite a crucial moment in the stage. And some people were saying are Lotta doing Sky's job for them, but was it at that point setting up the race for Roglic later, or was it defending their overall positions?
Yeah, defending their overall positions, and we don't want it to have Sky doing their game, playing their game, which they always do. Normally they push a certain amount of watts, and Robert just pushed a little bit more. That's why Pools was dropped, and you know, the Sky people were dropped earlier than normal. And of course, to get the break a little bit closer to what in the end panned out really good.
When we look back at the tour overall, I guess the one disappointment might be the team time trial, where your two guys lost a bit of time. What happened on that day?
Yeah, well, I think in the beginning there was not the right focus, or we wanted to start easy to go faster in the end, because we saw that it was a hard team time trial, but it was too easy, and normally we should not lose their 20 seconds, 25 seconds maybe. We should have a time around Bahrain's time there. But yeah, that happens.
And looking forward, you've got all these different options. You've got Groenewegen, you've got, you know, Kruijswijk and Roglic. Mm-hmm. Roglic looks like a guy who's still improving and could maybe win a Grand Tour. Do you think next year that would be, you'd come to one of the Grand Tours with a single focus to support him in that aim?
Well, we don't know yet. We have to finish this one, and then in the winter time we'll take a look at what we will be aiming for. But we all also showed that if you have this two focuses in one Tour de France, where in the first week there's a lot to do for a sprinter, and if you're only focused there on the GC and focused on not crashing or not losing time, it's also worth something to sprint. And we have the best sprinter of the world in our team. So, but again, in the wintertime, we will decide for that.
Richard Pluger there, the boss at Lotto NL Jumbo, who will become Team Jumbo next year.
Because you just mentioned NL Jumbo, I just want to make a point. There's always talk about the French not winning the Tour for, you know, ages, since 1985. But how about the Belgians and the Dutch? You know, it's the Dutch only won the Tour twice, and they haven't done it since Jop Zoetemelk in 1980. So it's been a very long time. How about the Belgians? You know, so, well, just to put things in perspective a little bit there. It's a very strange one, this one, because almost now into 2019, and no rider born in England ever won the Tour yet.
Hey, that's a good point. That's a good point. Last Belgian to win the Tour, though, Lucien Van Impe, 1976. Last Belgian to finish on the podium. We'll get back to you on that one. The last Dutchman to finish on the podium before Eric Broeking, 1990. Yeah. Team Sky, though, I mean, you know, Lucien Van Impe was the first Cyril Guimard rider to win the Tour. He went on to win the Tour with two other riders, Laurent Fignon and Bernardino. We've seen a similar thing here with, I suppose, Dave Brailsford and Team Sky, and they've now won the Tour de France with three different riders. It's unusual. And they have a system, they have a formula, and they have a way of riding this race. And a lot of people, well, feel that the Tour has suffered as a result because they have a stranglehold on the race. And is this a problem for the Tour?
Well, obviously it is. Well, you might have noticed this from time to time, make analogies with other sports. Having covered tennis for many years as well, there were times in the history of tennis when tennis was getting boring because you have a guy who dominates it and that there's no opposition. What made tennis so exciting in the last, almost the last decade? You know, because you had Federer against Nadal, that Wimbledon final was exciting. You need that kind of a position. And on top of it, you need to have another guy who can be a troublemaker like Novak Djokovic. Tennis is one of the most exciting sports in the world because you have that kind of a position. Cycling is lacking that. In football as well, in Champions League, you have, okay, you've got the Spanish teams, you've got also the Premier League teams. Cycling really needs, and even Team Sky need a little bit of a position to even get better and to win in even probably in more convincing fashion, but by not just kind of killing the race, or it makes for the spectators, what do we like to watch? Even if we appreciate the sport, we appreciate the efforts put in the team, appreciate the marginal gains, everything you want to talk about, but what we like is a good fight. And the fans want a good battle. They want personalities. They want conflicting personalities. And well, let's face it, the only interesting story in this tour was the conflict and the battle inside the same team. And it was not even a real battle between Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome.
We're witnessing a dynasty, aren't we? And I follow football, and so I'm going to talk about Liverpool, Manchester United's dynasties. How many players have left those clubs and gone on to be better somewhere else? Very few. And Team Sky are like that. Mikel Landa is an incredibly talented rider. And you just look at this tour and think, if Mikel Landa had stayed at Sky, could he have won the tour this year? He possibly could have done. There's something about Team Sky that means that they all have a kind of a... they're all aligned behind the same goal. Whereas you look at Movistar, I mean, how preposterous is it with the three riders they've got that before the third week begins, they start talking about how honourable it is to contest a team classification and win that, which no one cares about or is interested in. Or and maybe at Movistar headquarters in Spain, they're like, oh, great, yeah, we were the best team in the Tour de France, and that means we'll carry on sponsoring, which is... fine, absolutely fine. That's how the wheels of professional cycling are greased. If you can sell to your sponsor what you can achieve on the road, I've no problem with that at all. But to turn in to say to cycling journalists, we're really chuffed with this. I just think Team Sky have got an absolute laser focus on winning the Tour de France, and I think that was one of the most impressive things about the final week, where disruption or dissent could have crept in. Whether Chris Froome is tonight happy that he's finished third in the Tour de France and Geraint Thomas has won, or not he's happy, he absolutely committed to that,
yeah,
and helped make that happen.
He had no choice. I mean, Dumoulin made the point that it boils down to who's the strongest rider in the race, and he felt, and you know, he would know that Geraint Thomas was actually the strongest rider in the race. And I do think that, you know, what Team Sky have been good at is having the strongest rider in the race on their team and then controlling things. The interesting thing will come when they have the strongest team in the race, but not the strongest rider in the race. And that will happen. That will come, and it could come next year if Tom Dumoulin is the strongest rider in the race. And Geraint Thomas and Chris Froome are not actually as strong as him, then I think we've got a really interesting race on our
hands. May have the strongest rider in the race for the next X number of years to come with Egan Bernal.
They may.
Maybe the reason of the success of Team Sky, as you said, is that their only real goal of the season is the Tour de France, where in the same fashion as, you know, the British cycling team on track, their only one and only objective was and goal was the Olympics. Which means on track for many years, you know, the French, the Germans, the Dutch would win these World Cup track events, would win the World Championships. And when the Olympics came, they were absolutely shattered by the Brits, you know, because the goal for Team Britain was the Olympics. And maybe Team Sky, their only goal is actually to win what they're always... I'm not saying it's absolutely the only one, but the main and most important goal is to win the Tour de France. When you look at Quickstep won four stages in this Tour de France. They're the team who won the most stages. We kind of overlooked them a little bit. But what's important for Quickstep is to win the Tour of Flanders. Second option, winning Paris-Roubaix. Maybe Movistar, in a way, are more happy with winning the Vuelta than winning the Tour de France. Maybe the impact on the Spanish public, and Movistar is, as you know, a telephone company in Spain, is winning the Vuelta. And maybe the teams coming from countries who don't have a grand tour, their aim is the Tour de France. The Italians, where were the Italians? Where are the Italians? Where are the Italian teams in the Tour de France? I mean, there are five of them on the Giro. There's not even one of them on the tour. So maybe one of the reasons of the success of Team Sky is that they are one of the only teams really only goal is to win the tour.
Where are the Italians? And frankly, who cares, to paraphrase Barry Davis? I'm only saying that just to wind up Ciro, who I'm sure is listening.
Well, we're by a beach, so he might be down there lounging on the sand.
Absolutely.
I spoke at the finish of the time trial to Javier Atecha, the the Basque coach at Team Sky. He's been there a few years. We were in his, well, in France, but in the Basque country where he's from. I spoke to him about Geraint Thomas and also about, you know, what Team Sky might do next year with Geraint Thomas, Chris Froome and Egan Bernal, who must be close to challenging for a Grand Tour himself.
Finishing the tour in the Basque country, not obviously in Spain, but in the Basque country, and having Geraint Thomas win it must be a highlight for you, is it?
It was really nice to come back with the Tour de France in yellow to Basque country for us, for the Basque people. So it's been amazing. A lot of people doing the circuit with the Basque flag. So for the Basque, it's been a really good day.
When in this tour did you think Geraint could win it?
I don't know. I think he's been the strongest guy of the Tour de France in all the terrains. If you saw today, he was at the same level of the best time trialist. He was the strongest in the climbs. He's been in a fantastic performance. So I think he deserves more than a.
I know he spent a lot of time altitude this year. Three camps. Were you on any of those training camps with him?
No, it was in a different program, but I think he was doing the different altitude camps in the past as well. But maybe this year he's been more focused in the tour than the years before. Maybe his program, his big goal has been the tour, because he is so versatile and he can perform in different scenarios like classics, Ardennes, or stage races or Grand Tours. Maybe he had different goals the years before, and I think this year his big goal has been the Tour de France, and he showed an amazing performance here.
He's always been a very loyal team worker in the past, and he's often had a lot of bad luck. Do you think this will change him, this result?
Yeah, I don't know. As you said, he's been really, really loyal, and maybe if Froome will be in front of him, he will be working for him, and maybe he wouldn't finish even in the podium again. With his performance on the first week, I think he became a leader. He showed that maybe the years before he was not as strong as this year, because he was working for the team leaders. But when he got the opportunity to have this leadership, I think we saw what is capable to do it.
I mean, you've not finished this tour yet, but what happens next year when you've got Chris Froome, Geraint Thomas and Egan Bernal, who looks like in a year or two he could be challenging for a Grand Tour?
I don't know. There are a lot of races during the year, and the Tour is not the only one race. So all of them, they are super strong riders. Also, another strong riders that we have in the team can perform really well in a Grand Tour. So yeah, let's see how are the parcours of the different races next year, Giro, Tour, or Vuelta, and let's see what the riders and the team decide for all of them. But this year we had a really two strong leaders. It was not a problem. I think they raced really, really well, really honest between them. For the future, we can do doing the same.
And one more Grand Tour this year. You've won the Giro and the Tour. Who's going to win the? Who's going to lead the team at the Vuelta? I mean, I know Geraint Thomas was, I think, penciled to do that. Is that? Do you think that'll still be what he does?
Yeah, why not? I think now it's time to finish this game in Paris, and after Monday we can start deciding how they are recovering, how is this recovery process going, and try to have our best team again in Vuelta a España, and why not have this dream to win the three Grand Tours in the same year.
So that was Javier Atecha, the Basque coach at Team Sky. We spoke to a couple of other people at the finish, didn't we, Lionel? You had a word with Rafał Majka, who maybe had a bit of a disappointing tour.
Yeah, looked so good all the way through to the cobbles, fell on the cobbles, brushed off the impact of that fall, and it was kind of it wasn't a bad crash, it'd be fine, but then fell pretty short in the Alps, and then really tried very hard to win a stage, but it didn't work out.
I spoke to Bob Jungels as well, the Quickset rider who has ridden well at the Giro the last couple of years and came here for a sort of GC experience. Hasn't shown too much of himself, but I think he's a big rider for the future. Let's hear first from Majka and then from Bob Jungels.
Now the tour is nearly over, how do you reflect on your result and performance?
Yeah, for sure I miss a lot, especially the second week. Yeah, after the crash in Roubaix I didn't recover well. And yeah, but the third week I feel much better than I'm all the time the breakaway. I tried to win yesterday also the stage and also the short stage 65. And I have a little bit bad luck in the tour, but I hope so in the future it'll be better.
I mean, having Peter Sagan in the team, winning stages and the green jersey, were you nervous he might not be able to continue?
I'm sure Peter is like strong guy, and we're really lucky when you have this guy superstar in the team. And I remember also in the team comp when we win two jersey, me and Peter, and Peter for sure is then, for me, for another 5 years, he's win the green jersey.
What do you think of Geraint Thomas? Before the tour, if somebody had said to you Geraint Thomas will win, what would you have said then?
Ah, for sure, he's really strong. He's with also the Finé, and now he's demonstrated when he's also really strong in the Tour de France. Then I hope he have good luck and win this Tour de France.
But not a surprising winner for you?
No, really not. He's like demonstrated when he's a really strong guy, and he's also deserved to win the Tour de France.
Lastly, you've obviously got Peter Sagan. Your team has two objectives. Do you sometimes look at Team Sky in the mountains and think, oh, I wish I had as many domestiques, people who could work for you on the climbs?
No, but you know, now we come in Vuelta. We have also a strong team in Vuelta. Then we have Peter Kenauk, Formolo, and Buchmann, and Jay McCarthy. We have also a strong team there, and I hope so. We got good races and should be good in Vuelta.
On the podium in the Vuelta?
We see.
How do you reflect on your tour?
Well, I think it's been a very tough tour from the start. Very stressful first week. Was suffering a bit through the Alps. Getting better and better in the Pyrenees. And finally yesterday I found a little bit, just my style of racing a little bit back. Yeah, it's hard for me to ride always defensive and with the accelerate at the end to follow. But all in all, I think I'm very very happy. I think I learned a lot. I learned a lot this year actually, and I've been very far down, but also very happy a few days. And I think as a team, we can be very proud of ourselves.
So that was Rafał Majka, and then we heard a little bit there from Bob Jungels, François.
One of the good things about the cobble stage, which actually was an anticlimax in a way, because there were crashes, of course, but Degan Kolb and Van Avermaet, the specialist one, and there was not so much damage for the GC leaders. But the good thing about it is when you have a cobble stage in the Tour de France, later in the tour, the climbers can say, oh, you know, I crashed in at that turn, or oh, that little puncture I had in the cobble stage really hampered my performance, and I didn't realize it at the time. So I mean, it's a good excuse for climbers who don't perform to say, look, you know, it's because of the cobble stage. So if only for that, yeah, please keep cobbles on the Tour de France.
Definitely, I think that cobble stage was one of the highlights of the tour. Geraint Thomas, the winner of the 2018 Tour de France, famously one of the most approachable, most down-to-earth riders in the peloton. Will it change him, Lionel?
No. Well, he's already Geraint Thomas MBE, but Geraint Thomas, I mean, you could imagine him being knighted in New Year's Honours.
I mean, I can't believe we're talking about this. Really, are we talking about the honor system? And you know, I mean, is that the first thing we think about when Geraint Thomas wins the Tour de France?
Well, the
Chris Froome has never been knighted.
The main question I have about Geraint Thomas is, once again, and I said many times, I love the guy. I think he's brilliant, but he's not a bad guy. You know my bad guy theory. Is he happy with that? Is he going to go for more Grand Tour wins?
Why does he need to?
I think he was happy anyway, and
that's exactly
maybe part of the problem.
32 years of age,
yeah,
he's won
I think
the Tour de France. He's won multiple Olympic, Commonwealth, World Championship medals. You mock that. I mean, I'm no royalist.
Mock that. I admire that.
No, you mock my point about the honours system.
All right.
I mean, I'm no royalist, certainly. I'm no fan of the honours system.
Oh, Lionel Burney, CBE, has a certain ring to it.
But
I'm posing a valid question there. Will Geraint Thomas win another Grand Tour?
No.
No.
Absolutely not. No. Of course not. I mean,
so there we are. We witnessed a one-off event, which is something extraordinary. Geraint Thomas winning the Grand Tour.
I'm very reluctant to make any predictions at all with my
I think he could win Tour of Flanders or Paris-Roubaix?
What he should do now is target one of those races, because he has the ability to win one of those races. He won E3, he's been up there in Gent-Wevelgem, he's got the ability over the cobbles to win Paris-Roubaix or to win the Tour of Flanders.
More than that, those races are close to his heart. He's got an affinity for them and an understanding of them, and he recognises the history of those events.
Dave Brailsford told us the other day that he will be a Team Sky rider next year. He's not signed the contract yet. He's out of contract at the end of the year. He's very confident he will be a Team Sky rider. His value will have gone up enormously, and that value will be based on his Tour de France win. And so there will be pressure wherever he is to perform again in a Grand Tour. And that, will there? Or maybe with Team Sky, he'll be given the opportunity to do one of these races.
This is a fascinating thing about sports contracts. There are certain people who are paid for what they might do in the future, and there are certain people who are paid for what they have just done or what they have done in the past. Geraint Thomas's value to Team Sky is so great as an ambassador, as a face, as a somebody who can project a really likeable image of that team. We sat through the press conference there, and we didn't see Geraint Thomas at his best yesterday in the press conference. We didn't see him at his best. He wasn't his sharpest or sparkiest. And yet he's still a likeable presence. He's always got something interesting to say. And it kind of doesn't rub people up the wrong way. And I think there's an awful lot to be said for that.
He's a very down-to-earth guy with a very dry sense of humour. We've heard a lot from other people. We heard a lot from other people about him the other day. He's a very popular guy, because he's straightforward, and the same with everybody. I don't think those aspects of his personality will change with this success. He's very relatable too for a lot of people.
What about Team Sky's, roto next season? Would it be Geraint Thomas for the Giro, Chris Froome for the Tour, and Egan Bernal for the Vuelta?
I think that's a very good shout, yeah. Francois. I think that'd be the way I was thinking. The only problem there might be if Geraint Thomas also harbours classics ambitions, whether going for the Cobble Classics and the Giro is achievable in that time frame. I don't know. Who knows? I think we all think it's kind of one-off, Geraint Thomas winning the Tour. Everything's gone right for him for 3 weeks. He's been in terrific form. He's not had any bad luck. And he's put all his opponents did have bad luck or misfortune at some point. And he's put together the perfect race, and he's won the Tour de France, which I personally, as anybody who's listened to the podcast out of the Tour, didn't think could or would happen. But there we go. That's sport. Unpredictable.
Well, that's it for the 2018 Tour de France. It's all over. And it's 11 months or thereabouts before it all gets underway again in Brussels to mark the 50th anniversary of Eddy Merckx's first Tour de France victory in 1969. It's not the end of the cycling podcast coverage from the Tour, though. We will have an episode of the press conference where we answer your questions that you phoned into our WhatsApp line. That will be released early in the week. And then for friends of the podcast, we have 3 really special episodes coming over the next week and a bit. There's an extended and totally different edit of Orla Chenoui's day in the Team Sky car with Rod Ellingworth. She was in the car on the stage to Alpe d'Huez, where, effectively Geraint Thomas won the Tour, because the Tour was won on the Alpe this year when he won the stage in his yellow jersey. This episode will be different to the Kilometre Zero, which focused much more on Rod's relationship with Geraint Thomas and Mark Cavendish. In the Friends of the Podcast episode, it will look at Team Sky's Tour de France as a whole and their discussions in the car on the Alpe d'Huez stage. We also have Ian Boswell's diary. Ian Boswell was one of only 4 Katusha riders to finish the Tour, one of whom, Ilnur Zakarin, made it into the top 10 with a very fine last couple of days in the Pyrenees and then the time trial. So we've been listening to bits of Ian's diary as he's been phoning it in, and friends of the podcast are in for a treat with that one. And there's also going to be an extended episode on Richard's interview with Andy Schleck. We made a Kilometre Zero on that, but this covers a lot more ground, goes into more detail about Andy Schleck's career and what he's done since his career. But that's it from our race coverage. And before we go, I would like to thank a lot of people who have helped us during the course of the last 3 and a bit weeks. Our production team do a fantastic job every night turning around the episodes and getting them online as quickly as possible after the stage. So a big thank you to John Mooney, Tom Wally, Adam Bowie, Will Jones, Alex Adey and Matt Field. And of course, Jonathan Rowe, who produces the occasional episode but does so much more work besides to keep everything going. Really looks after all of our social media. Big thank you to Jonathan. And to Orla Shenoui, of course, who joined us for a few days in the Alps to make a couple of episodes of Kilometre Zero and to cover La Course with Richard. Thank you to David Luxton and everyone at David Luxton Associates, and to Simon Gill, our photographer, who spent a few days between the Roubaix stage and the Alps travelling with us. We'd also like to thank Sean and Ollie and everyone at Audio Boom for keeping us on the air. Our coverage literally wouldn't be possible without our sponsors. RAFA and Science in Sports support enables us to cover the Grand Tours. And a thank you also to Hans Grohe, who supported our Kilometre Zero episodes during the tour, and to Skoda for loaning us the car, which I will deliver back home to the UK on Monday evening. Thank you to Santaray and 13 Senses, whose music you hear in the episodes, and also to Ross at Basecamp and Chris Cole at Chalet La Gietaz for putting us up, and in exchange we did a couple of live events at their very pleasant venues in the Alps. And a big thanks also to Simon Lund for letting us stay at his house near La Rosière. If you'd like to hear a bit more about that, go back and listen to the episodes on the day of the La Rosière stage and the one after. And a huge thank you to François Thomazeau, who's joined us again for a second Tour de France and has really added so much more than just his French flavour to our coverage. It's been an absolute pleasure to travel with François and listen to his stories, both in the episodes that we record and also from his position in the nest in the back of our Skoda. It's been an absolute pleasure to travel with François, even if the size of the bill from his favourite Pyrenean hideaway, Le Viscos, well, I'll be having nightmares about that until the end of the year. Finally, and most importantly, our biggest thanks go to you, our listeners. Whether you've listened to the occasional episode or every single one, we really appreciate your support, your comments, your criticisms, and we hope that you have enjoyed the journey with us. We've certainly enjoyed having you along for the ride. Anyway, that is all from our Tour de France coverage, but don't worry, we'll be back with regular episodes as we count down to daily coverage of the Vuelta a España in August.
You have been listening to the Cycling Podcast at the 2018 Tour de France. Thanks to our sponsors, RAFA and Science in Sport. The music is by Santoré. This episode was produced by John Mooney.